It is anything. It is everything. It is the Buck Gritano Podcast.
Ancient alien theories.
Ancient civilization.
Spirituality.
Mythology.
Reality TV.
Reality TV star.
Current events.
Not so current events.
Comedy.
Religion.
Music.
Authors.
Sports.
If it's hot and if it's happening, it's right here, right now, on the Buck Gritano Podcast. And now, here's the man who makes Stream of Mind a streaming sensation, Buck Gritano.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Buck Gritano, the Buck Gritano Podcast, coming to you weekly. Every Thursday night, I'm trying to do it, 8 o'clock. Tonight, super pumped. Last week, we had Spencer Ross, who announced the Yankees, who announced for the Yankees, the Rangers, and all that sports. That's the sports side of Buck Gritano, a diehard sports fan, but also really into a show, and it kind of ties into our guest tonight. Ancient Aliens, I don't know if you guys, I mean, everybody seems to be watching Ancient Aliens, right? I really enjoy it. Bumped on this, you know, watching it, got a chance to, you know, watch Nick Redfern, and I had a chance to put him up, bring him on. So, welcome, Nick. How you doing, Nick?
Hey, Buck. I'm doing good, thanks.
I totally appreciate...
Apart from getting over to the flu, but beyond that, I'm all right.
And I totally appreciate that, man, 100%. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Feeling under the weather. Jump right in, author of a lot of... Honestly, I think you're more of a UFO-type guy, I think. I know it's just cryptozoologist, but I know you're definitely more towards the UFOs. Writing tons of books. Awesome. I had Ken Gearhart on. He wrote a bunch of books, too. But you're a little bit more like the UFOs, and I like that stuff, man. It makes you open your mind up. A couple of books, not just aliens, but I guess one of your books was... Bloodlines of the Gods. That was really cool, man. Got a chance to do. Thank you for putting it on audiobook, man. That's really cool for guys like me, man. On the run, always going. Listen to about 7.5 hours of Nick Redfern, you know?
Oh, well, thanks. I think a lot of people, you know, like audiobooks. You know, you can just pop it in and, you know, listen to it. Some of them are available on CD, some of them, you know, just download. So, but however you want to listen to them, you know, I think people enjoy kind of doing it that way. I've got a lot of feedback about the audio books. You know, people like to listen to them, you know, on vacation, on the beach, that kind of thing, you know. So, you know, it's a good way of sort of reading a book, so to speak, you know, by listening to it. So, sort of a different market, but you know, there are a lot of people who just like to read audio books, you know, or listen to them. So.
Nah, you got looking at one here, man. I told Ken, I said, you got to get some audio books out, man. He's like, oh, really? I do. And I said, listen, you got to, man. Get them out there. I don't know how you release the audio books if they're older books, like some of them may have released that were older, yeah. And you know, just released now. And I'm saying to myself, I never read none of your stuff, so. I'm like, wow, he got a new book out, man. He just put on audio, and I'm like, wow. So the one that really jumped out at me, I'm listening to it now, and which is kind of cool. Maybe you can talk a little bit about it. The NASA conspiracies, you have a book out, and you go into all different angles of NASA being involved with maybe cover-ups or maybe not cover-ups, faking stuff. You start off with the moon, with, you know, astronauts. It just bugged me out. But the one that really was cool was one guy, McGavin, and it was he approached another guy, I guess, from outer space, and I think it was in Mexico. You tell the story. Let people know out there about one of the stories in the book,
yeah, sure.
NASA conspiracies.
Well, the NASA conspiracy is sort of like a history of NASA's involvement in the UFO subject, and over the years there have been a lot of ties between the UFO issue and NASA, from the perspective of astronauts seeing UFOs, you know, their sort of files having been opened by NASA on UFO cases, including one that occurred in December 65 in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, which was kind of like an East Coast Roswell-type crash, which we know that NASA played some sort of at least unclear involvement in the affair. But the one you're talking about is sort of a very strange story. It involved a guy named P.T. McGavin, and he did some contract work for the agency in the very earliest years of its creation, in the early 60s this was, and he did work periodically for them. And I interviewed him back in 2003, and he told me this story about how he felt compelled, for reasons that he didn't really understand, in October 73, to travel out to the town of Aztec, New Mexico. Now, Aztec has a crashed UFO story attached to it, where allegedly a UFO crashed in a place called Heart Canyon in Aztec in March 1948. Now, McGavin really didn't have any previous involvement or interest in the UFO subject, but he just felt this weird sort of feeling came over him that he had to go out there, and he literally did sort of drive over there. It was like a 300 and something mile journey, you know, so it was a long trip really. And when he got out there, he got out the car, and again, no real understanding of what he was doing or why. But this sort of, you know, like a classic UFO, like a triangular, not a flying saucer, but like a triangular-shaped, black-colored UFO, which a lot of people report, essentially came down. And he claimed to have sort of been confronted by this very human-looking being who was around about 6.5 feet tall, dressed in like a one-piece, almost like a pilot's outfit, and had long blonde hair. Now, reports of sort of long, blonde-haired, very human-looking aliens have been surfacing and circulating for decades. Over the years, they've become known within ufology as the Space Brothers. Excuse me. And reports go back to the early 1950s, and most of these events are reported in sort of isolated desert locations, not unlike where McGavin was in Heart Canyon in Aztec, New Mexico. Now, the story was that these entities chose people at random to try and sort of spread their message. In other words, they wanted us to try and fix the problems with the planet, but they would sort of subtly and covertly choose certain people who they believed, you know, would have the ability to sort of, you know, people would listen to them, and they could spread the word, and they'd develop more and more followers. And that's exactly what happened. For example, a guy named George Van Tassel in the 1950s, he held a yearly conference out at a place called Giant Rock in California in the desert. And at the height of his sort of symposiums, which are outside ones, open-air ones, he would get like 13,000 people turn up. You know, and those 13,000 people influenced others and others. So it became a major force, if you like. Now, McGavin felt that he was being primed to, you know, sort of carry on that kind of legacy. But where the story gets sort of intriguing but really weird is that McGavin actually mentioned this to a number of colleagues and friends within NASA. And this led him to have sort of a covert meeting with an intelligence operative linked to NASA, who said that, well, yes, these entities, these beings are real, and we do have our concerns about their motivations. And when he asked why, you know, when it just seemed that they were actually trying to prevent us from destroying ourselves, McGavin was told that allegedly these beings actually aren't from another world, but they were sort of the last sort of remnants of an ancient terrestrial race of beings, kind of similar to the human race that coexisted with us thousands of years ago, and that when we, Homo sapiens, started to have a bigger force on the planet, they moved underground. And he said that he was told in this classified briefing, or covert briefing, if you like, that the government secretly knew that at least one aspect of the UFO phenomenon wasn't extraterrestrial, but they believed it was sort of, from here, an ancient human race that sort of coexists with us, primarily spends most of its time deep underground, but occasionally surfaces. And the NASA people he spoke to claim that the reason why these so-called Space Brothers wanted to steer us away from nuclear war was because they share the planet with us, you know. So in other words, if we destroy ourselves, we're going to probably destroy them as well. So, and that kind of makes some sense, because if you think about it, why would aliens from however, you know, vast distances away, why would they really care about our planet if we destroyed it? You could make a good argument that they wouldn't care. But if they're an ancient human race of some sort, which is forced to share the planet with us, and given our warlike ways, then you can understand why, you know, they might want us to try and alter our sort of, you know, the directions we're going in. So, yeah, it was a fascinating story, which even McGavin admitted he wasn't sure if they really were aliens or if they were ancient humans of some sort, or was it, you know, the government giving him a fake story to hide the fact that they really were aliens, you know? So this is one of the problems you get, you know, knowing who's telling the truth.
It's a Marvel, right? Like, it's a Marvel story, yeah. Man. Like it settles like that. Then he goes up to the commander with the patch with the one eye, and he's like, no, it's not. It's the opposite. it's like the Flash or any kind of story like that. But what really gets me bugged out is that he went back and told his friends, his buddies, what happened, how quickly they turned and snitched on him, right? I mean, then they found out, and then what was it? Callahan, I believe it was. He was involved with NASA. Then you couldn't figure out where he was. He left. He disappeared after interviewing him and telling him this stuff. So it's kind of crazy, man. Because if I was Gavin, I wouldn't want to come out and tell people. Like, how tough that must be to go out and say, oh, I seen an alien, and he was telling me that we have to stop this stuff. I mean, he'd probably look at me like I had 55 heads. You know what I mean, Nick?
Well,
so the story is like, and then they're living here. Where would they be? Where would they live? At the core, the center of the core? Where would these aliens from the Blondes be, actually?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, if they're sort of extraterrestrial, then, you know, they could be from any number of stars. I mean, if you look at the stars up in the sky at night, each of those stars is a sun like our sun, you know, and the number of them is incredible. So, you know, it's not impossible that if they are extraterrestrial, they could come from any number of star systems. But if they are some sort of ancient human terrestrial race that's related to us, but, you know, coexist with us a long time ago and then decided to move underground, you know, there are actually a lot of rumors and stories about sort of massive underground caverns and caves and things like this, particularly out in the California desert, you know, if you knew the entrance points, that kind of thing. So it's a very controversial area, you know, with people. Some people on one side of the coin, so to speak, think it's extraterrestrial. Some people think it's interdimensional. Other people think it's like ancient humans. Some people think, you know, the aliens are really time travelers, us from the future. So, you know, there are multiple different theories as to what these things are and what they want from us.
Nah, it's totally mind-blowing, man. That's what I look at it. Because it could be anything. You look at it like, if you can't prove it wrong, is it? I mean, can you really come up with a theory and say, "Oh, that is wrong"? To prove that theory wrong, no. That's how religions are made, you know.
Yeah.
No, it's impossible. So you can't tell me that. But if you come up with some research and some ideas, and it kind of makes sense, like reading what you do for a living is amazing. You get the research history, not just UFO stuff. Stuff about us as being humans and stuff like that, and, you know, the past, you on ancient aliens and stuff like that. The author, how do you come up with an idea for a book? Like, say, you wrote the NASA conspiracies. How do you jump in from that, say, to Bloodlines? Like, how do you pick your topic or what you want to choose?
Well, I always try and put sort of myself in the position of the people who read the books, because as well as writing books, you know, I read books as well. So you always want to, the main thing is you want to be able to give the reader something new. You don't want to just sort of rehash things and go over old ground. So I always think it's important, if people are going to buy your books, you've got to, you know, you've got to give them value for money. That's, you know, that's the right thing to do. And so I always sort of look at things that interest me, but which I've never covered personally. And then if something crops up, like with the NASA book or Bloodline of the Gods, I'll sort of skirt around the internet and look around and see, well, has anybody else done anything similar? And if they have, well, there's no point, you know, copying another book, because it's just pointless. But if somebody hasn't covered those areas, like with Bloodline of the Gods, which hadn't really been covered to any great extent, then I'll sort of look into it further, and if a publisher might be interested, I'll put together like a summary of what the book would be like and what it would talk about, and then sort of submit it to the publisher and see if they find that interesting. So that's basically the process. But it essentially comes down to, you want to be able to give the reader something completely new, you know.
Yeah, and I appreciate your style in researching and looking at other writers and other ideas and putting it in the book, and that's cool because it's totally different ideas and different people, different minds mixed into, you know, it's just not, you're not telling somebody what the situation is. I mean, you look at some stuff out there, I'm not going to pick and point who they are, but they try to make money off predicting what is going on with, say, people from aliens and out of space and on the moon. Well, you're researching, you know, like almost like an FBI agent. You're actually researching, or a detective, and coming up with different answers and stuff like that. I like Bloodlines of the Gods. When you talk about Rh negative blood, and the first thought of it, and I'm not a guy that knows any of this stuff. You know, I don't follow how far we go back and stuff like that, and you know where we interbred and stuff. And then you said that we came from a Reese monkey, and I'm like, what, a strain of DNA? I'm like, holy shit! Like, I'm actually like, I thought that was like, you know, there's so many different angles. I was brought up Catholic, where I was baptized, and you know, Adam and Eve, and that's when it started. But now you look back and you say to yourself, wow, there's some history, there's some proof, they're finding bones, they're finding, you know, evidence, but I still have to believe in what I brought up, I guess, right? And I'm trying to split the two, and you're saying to yourself, wow, if this is really true, what I believe in, it possibly is not true, you know what I mean? It's like, that's scary, and when you've got to be, you pass away, Nick, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't want to be wrong, like, you know what I mean? Like, oh man, I left that for that, but it's the scary part, you know, but what you're doing is absolutely wonderful. Ancient Aliens, right? When you got on the show Ancient Aliens, you're just pretty much focusing on the topic of the show that day and putting your input in, pretty much, right?
Yeah, I mean, what I always try and do, whether it's like a book or a TV show, is, you know, is present the information I've uncovered. You know, when you talked about belief systems and things like this, I'm not in the business of sort of, you know, telling people, I know for sure that this is the answer to the UFO phenomenon. Because if I'm honest, I don't. You know, there's enough evidence to suggest that UFOs are real. There's no doubt in my mind that there's a real phenomenon. But if you ask me, could I honestly say it's extraterrestrial, or it's time travelers, or it's something that jumps from another dimension into ours? No, I cannot say for sure. And nobody can if they're honest, because we just don't have all the answers. So what I try and do is present information and data and, you know, witnesses, and then try and construct some sort of answer as to what the case might revolve around. But to provide an answer, but not where, you know, it's like Nick Redfern is telling you that this is definitely the answer, because when people start saying they know the full story and they've got all the answers and they know exactly what's going on, but, you know, they're deluding themselves and they're actually lying to their audience, because, you know, that's not how it is. If we all knew what the answer was, we wouldn't have this show right now, because we would all know. So I always, when it's like Ancient Aliens, you know, you always try and, you know, answer a question based upon your own opinion and conclusions, but also make sure the audience knows that, you know, that it's your opinion, your theory. And, you know, there's a big difference between theory, belief, and evidence. And I think it's important, particularly in subjects like the UFO subject, to recognize the difference between those different, you know, issues.
I got Nick Redfern, and honestly, I give you a big shout out, because when you did a YouTube video and I was listening to it, and you were like, I never had a UFO encounter, period. Doesn't mean, like, and I was like, this guy's saying it, like, you know what I mean? You didn't get taken up in a spaceship in the middle of the night in your living room. No, Nick did not. And you admit to it. But the thing is, you know, a transfer over from, like, say, Ancient Aliens, and you do an Ancient Aliens, like, it's just your opinion. And I like it, the what if. And people that say that, oh, you don't watch that Ancient Aliens stuff, blah, 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 blah. But they're the same people watching it. And I'm like, okay, all right, you're watching it. But it must be kind of cool, because you got, like, a little community. You feel like you're tied to some of the guys on the show, like, with people who don't know who you really are?
So Sorry, say that again. What was that last bit?
No, it's my New York City broken English.
That's okay. Did you say that last bit then?
No, Ancient Aliens, like the cast of Ancient Aliens. Are you guys like tied together by people who don't know who Nick is? Do people tie you with the show only?
Well, I do a lot of TV shows, you know, but I guess probably Ancient Aliens is the most visible one that I'm on. But, I sort of run into some of the other guys on the show, like at conferences, that kind of thing, you know. But for the most part, you know, I don't sort of see them that often, but it is sort of usually, you know, at an event, sort of a speaker's event, that kind of thing. And but you do find, you know, that there is sort of a community, if you like, of people who like to watch Ancient Aliens, but they may not be into Bigfoot, you know, or they may not be into ghost stories. And then you have the people who do the ghost shows, and they have their following, but they're not interested in UFOs. So you tend to find that within all aspects of the paranormal, there are, you know, people who follow particular topics and subjects, and they like particular shows, or they like particular authors who write books. So and I think that's a good thing, because it does create like a community style environment. And I think, well, that's not essential, but I think a lot of people do like that, when particularly when they go to conventions and conferences and they get to hang out with people and ask questions and, you know, have a drink with them at the bar afterwards or whatever, and everybody just has a good time. And I think, you know, it's important to have that aspect in the subject. You know, if it would just be, you know, nothing but just you know, data and information, although that's important, I think people do like to sort of kick back and realize they're talking to real people and not just sort of encyclopedic robots or whatever.
I think that people just like to be around other people, man. Humans like to be around people. And especially when you have kind of some common knowledge, same common passion, because I honestly, for people there that look at this and read books and forget about it when they put it down, they're reading that book to take in information for their own research and stuff like that. So that's kind of cool. And I love when in the book on the NASA conspiracies, you got a chance to interview Nick Pope, and he's on Ancient Aliens too. So that was kind of cool. I think that was pre the show, right? That you did that interview with him, right? When he released his book, right? His science fiction book. And you were saying, like, is it for people out there that Nick Pope had a science fiction book? And it's funny because you didn't know if he was putting out the truth or he was putting out sci-fi. So that's kind of cool for that. How was that to get to interview him?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've known Nick probably since about the mid-90s thereabouts, when he was working in the Ministry of Defence, which is the British equivalent of the Department of Defence. And for 3 years, he worked in one particular office of the MOD, which handled UFO reports. And he was actually quite open and friendly and accessible and willing to chat about some of the cases that he'd looked into, and, you know, several of which involved military personnel and police officers, you know, so they were quite credible reports. And so I interviewed him several times over the years, I think between sort of about 96 and about 99, on various aspects of the UFO phenomenon. And he's a cool guy. You can hang out with him, you know, he doesn't have any sort of you know, he's not one of these sort of ego types, leave me alone or anything like that. You know, he's happy to hang out and have a good time, which is good. But like most people who have who've worked in government and retired, they understand that, you know, because of the nature of their job, there's only so much they can talk about, you know, for security reasons and that kind of thing. So, you know, he's related some interesting information, but I don't think we're getting the complete story. Now, a few years back, he wrote a couple of sci-fi novels, and rumors were flying around that, you know, was it actually sci-fi, or was he talking about, in sort of a fictional format, the truth that he actually couldn't talk about in a non-fiction book? And you had different people, again, on different sides of the fence, saying, well, I think this, somebody else said, no, I think that. So again, you know, all we can do is sort of, you know, follow the trail and give our opinions, you know, on these kind of things. So, and I think that's the, like I said, that's a responsible way to investigate these things is to present the reader or the listener with the information you found, but don't force it down their throat as the actual 100% truth when we don't fully know what the truth is even yet.
Nick Redfern, Buck Rotano podcast. And I do, and you're right, it's your opinion, and I've put a lot of research into it. Now, when did it say it hit you, like the UFO sighting or event or whatever that triggered the mind of Nick Redfern to be UFO, to research UFOs? When did that hit you and say, I'm going to do this for a living? When did that hit you?
Well, my interest in UFOs, my dad was in the British Royal Air Force. He was a radar mechanic, and he was involved in several UFO incidents in the early 1950s when UFOs were tracked approaching the English coastline, the east coast of England, coming from towards Scandinavia. And the first thought was could it be some sort of sneak attack by the Russians? So fighter planes were sent up, and the pilots reported seeing not Russian aircraft, but these strange, very brightly lit balls of light, which seemed to be under some sort of intelligent control. They were sort of flitting around the aircraft and following them and then shooting away. And this went on for 3 nights, and everybody was told, from the pilots, the radar mechanics like my dad, the radar operators, ground crew, everybody was told, you won't talk about this. And my dad didn't until I was about 12, 13, something like that, and he told me this story. And it got me interested, and then when I was around that age, I started reading books on the subject. Some of the writers around at that time, like Brad Steiger and John Keel, people like that. And when I finished school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I wasn't actually the best student. For me, school was like hanging around with all my friends and having a good time,
listening to the Ramones.
Yeah, exactly. and so when I left school, as luck would have it, I wasn't that good at school, but I enjoyed reading. I loved books. When I left school, there was a job offer coming up in the local town where I was living, so I just applied for it, and it was a job working on a new magazine called Zero. And basically what Zero was sort of like an entertainment magazine for teenagers. So, it covers like music, fashion, TV, that kind of thing, interviews with bands,
Justin
interviews
Bieber
with
stuff,
actors.
The Justin Bieber. Yeah, you know what you're talking
yeah,
about.
Exactly.
Justin Bieber stuff of today, I got
but,
you.
Well, yeah, I probably would. Well, I wouldn't have wanted to interview him, but
he's from outer space. You didn't know that, right?
Yeah, but to me, I enjoyed the fact that it wasn't sort of your average normal job, and I enjoyed the fact that I didn't have to wear a suit and tie for work, which I hate. And have you ever seen me on Ancient Aliens? I always wear the same shirt because I only own one shirt. Everything else I own is like black T-shirts and biker jackets and whatever.
That's so funny. No way. You gave away your secret, man. Now I'm only looking. Now every time I watch it, because I watch it all the time, and I watch the same. Honestly, I'll be honest with you. I listen to it to go to bed. I don't even, it's on YouTube or wherever I, find it. Now, because they don't put it on demand, which is killing me. History Channel on Verizon I have, they don't put it on demand. So I got to set the record to tape every Friday they're playing it now, since they don't have the History too, and it's kind of killing me. Like I'm saying, you got to put Ancient Aliens on some more. Is there a new season coming up, I hear? Or are you a part of the new season?
Yeah, there is a new one coming up, but I'm not sure exactly when it starts. But, I mean, it's done well. I think, I forget how many seasons it is now, like 9 or 10, which is, which is really a high figure. You tend to not get that with sort of documentary type shows. You do with sort of, dramas like NCIS and CSI,
this is like a three show series, if that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You throw a documentary.
Exactly, yeah.
I see what you're saying. Absolutely. Well, what they did over there is absolutely amazing, because they put all these smart guys, and say what you want about them away from Ancient Aliens, when they're doing that show, they're all brilliant. Brilliant, and regardless if you believe them or not, I mean, whatever they're into, but it's just absolutely, and they're passionate. But they don't put it. It amazes me how it survived. What did you think it would survive 11, 10 seasons of Ancient Aliens?
Well, I didn't, mainly because you don't really see that happen, you know, with any other shows. I mean, I've done 40 or 50 shows, probably, no, more than that, actually, now, both in the UK and the US. And a lot of these shows, you know, they'll have sort of one season, if they're lucky, of 6, 7, 8 episodes, and they don't even make a second season, you know, and then you just go on another show, which lasts sort of 4 or 5 episodes, or another one show does 12 episodes. So, yeah, this one is sort of, Ancient Aliens is really a little bit kind of out of the box, so to speak, in terms of trying to parallel it in relation to other shows, you know, which just don't last. But for some reason, you know, that one did. Now, there have been a few other ones, like, not on UFOs, but things like Finding Bigfoot. You know, that one did really well. And a few others. And Ken.
How about killing Bigfoot now? Now we can kill him now. We're going to hunt him down and kill him. That's what they're putting out
there. Yeah,
that's
right. I mean, the thing is, with a lot of TV shows, when you're talking about the paranormal, there's only so many things you can cover, you know, like UFOs, ghosts, Bigfoot, strange creatures, etc. So the thing for the goal for all these shows is to come up with something a little bit different to another show. You know, that's kind
of
like why...
Ken, you got one guy. I mean, I'm calling you Ken. Nick, I'm sorry. so we have Ken on last time, but you look at it as paranormal, and I like that stuff, but I'm a pussycat, man. I can't go to sleep at night. If I watch it during the day, I'm fine. I can kind of watch that, you know, like the murder mysteries or the unsolved mysteries. I used to love unsolved mysteries as a kid. I mean, hearing that guy's voice, and I forget his name, passed away many years ago, but I used to like to hear that. But at nighttime, I can't watch that stuff. I get scared, man. You even got three innocent urban kids or black guys that do a show, and it's kind of funny. They put a little comedy into finding, you know, really, but it looks like they're investigating. I don't know. We look at shows like that. Do you think they're for real, or it's like almost like staged? Not staged, but you know what I mean. It's reality-wise.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I've been asked to do some shows which, you know, when I've sort of read the summary and whatever, you know, it clearly is staged, you know, where they want you to do this and they want you to do that. And, you know, it's kind of like, well, if we don't find Bigfoot, can you just pretend you heard something? I'm like, well, no. If I hear something in the woods, then I'll talk about it. If I see something, yeah. If I find footprints of Bigfoot, yeah. But when it comes to actually, you know, they want you to say, well, I saw something when I didn't, I won't do that. Because that's sort of, you know, that's to me, that's crossing the line, you know.
If you want to get an Academy Award, you can become an actor, man. You know, but I like.
Well, I don't want to come into it that badly, you know.
but I can see you taking part in like a science fiction like movie. You know, the guy, the biker dude, man, with the bandana, come off like a Harley, and you chase down zombies or something like that, man.
Well, that's all right.
Cool.
I mean, that's all cool. I mean, I don't mind sort of, you know, I don't mind doing, I've actually done, you know, sort of different types of TV, but the one that I won't cross the line is where a show basically wants you to lie, you know, for the sake of them just getting an episode. And so, you know, people, I mean, I've had directors say, Nick, why won't you just say that we did hear some strange howlings in the woods? And I say, well, because we didn't. You know,
that's not cool.
No.
Then your credibility is down a drain, man. You know, but probably no one would know, but you know, and you have to live with some stuff,
that's right.
You know, man?
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. I love it. Now, you wrote so many books. I heard, you know, listening to other interviews with you, how you make time to write books. But out of all the books you wrote in the last past, how many? Almost 20 years? Over 20 years of books? Right?
Well, it's just 20 years this year, actually, yeah.
Oh, congratulations. That's the 20th anniversary of writing books.
Yeah.
And I've only been around for about 5 months of it, but I'm kind of enjoying it. Like I said, I was following American Pharoah, the horse. You grew up in England, man. You know about the ponies. You know a little bit. They go out there, they run around the track, and the queen owns them. I was following that. Now all of a sudden I'm listening to your Men in Black stories, which they scare the shit out of me, man. Men in Black and the children, the black eyed children. Oh man, that's scary. But horse racing, we have a race called the Black Eye Susan. That's like before the whatever. But so it kind of relates a little bit. I get scared about that. But out of all the books you've written, and so far I only read three of them, but I'm adding it. Which one do you say to yourself, I'm the proudest of? That this is it, man. It's the best. You know that. Which one did you enjoy the most? Put it that way. I don't say the best. That's not the right. Which one do you enjoy writing the most?
Well, the subject that I definitely enjoy writing about the most is the Men in Black mystery. I've done three books on the Men in Black and one on Women in Black stories. I've got another one coming out later this year. Now, a lot of people, you know, think of the Men in Black, they think of Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, you know, from the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. With the little pug.
But a lot of people don't realize that the movies were based on real reports of Men in Black sightings going back to the late 40s and early 50s. But the big difference between the real Men in Black and the Hollywood versions is that most witnesses to the real ones describe seeing like figures dressed in black suits and sort of white shirts, skinny black tie, and black fedora hats and sunglasses. But the witnesses have said that when they've been stood close to them, they actually don't look fully human. They look sort of really pale, and very often they have these oversized eyes that they try and hide behind these black sunglasses. And so people have said when they saw them, they didn't look entirely human. They look sort of semi-human, but not almost like a cross between an alien and a person. So, in other words, there's a lot of weird stuff about the real Men in Black reports, and it almost kind of crosses over into sort of paranormal type phenomena, not just, you know, secret agents, as people might think.
Nah, they scared the shit out of me. There was one event, it's probably like the most famous one, where there was a lady that, it was in the doorway, you probably know which one it is. They took pictures of him, and he was there like 4 or 5 days, and they took a picture of him, and he was wearing the same, and like, what gets me is that they like old cars, which is like the trend, the real fancy old cars. But when Ken came on, he talked about the Mothman prophecies, and with that, even the Men in Black were showing up there, and that combined, that must be like the paradise story for you, investigating UFOs, paranormal, and everything tied into one. That was like the perfect like storm right there for a ride or anything. But the Men in Black definitely scare me. What do you think they are? You think lean towards more of the government knowing what's going on with them? I'm not saying the government, but a government tied people. Think that would be like the way you lean towards?
Well, the real Men in Black, they're clearly not from the government. They're something else, you know, something much weirder. And I'm sort of more inclined to think either there's something sort of paranormal, supernatural, or as the other theory is that they could be some sort of alien creature that looks actually not dissimilar to us, but they look different enough to where if you took a real close look at them, you think, wow, you know, what's wrong with that person? But there's some even weirder aspects of the Men in Black where I've got some cases where people have seen UFOs and then, you know, a man in black will turn up at the door late the next night and threaten the person not to talk about what they've seen. But after the Men in Black have gone, the people have reported things like violent poltergeist activity in the home, as if some sort of supernatural energy has been left behind after the Man in Black's gone. So, you know, there's no way that can be, you know, somebody from the government. But I mean, when you look at the, you know, the Mothman stuff that you mentioned, I'm sure Ken got into this, but I mean, one of the interesting things is that Point Pleasant, West Virginia, where this little town where all the Mothman stuff happened in the 60s, I mean, they were having crossovers with Mothman, you know, this strange flying creature with these glowing red eyes. But you also had UFO encounters. You had the Men in Black turning up and threatening Mothman witnesses. And you had a lot of paranormal activity going on. So it was kind of like they all came, all these different phenomena all came together in this little town.
And I know other people have said about the town that there was a lot of native, you know, I'm not saying burial site grounds on, there, but all along that river, the Ohio River, was, you know, plenty of Native Americans, I'm sure. Oh, man, that's all twisted into one. That's the scary thing about the Men in Black. And they said in one report at Point Pleasant that it seemed like he had like tubes coming out of his legs, one person said. And then Ken said something about clicking a pen. Like one witness said, got the Men in Black amazed. He was just clicking it. Like he saw it like, I don't know, my kid with a new toy or something like that. But they're kind of scary. Do you look at them? I look at them like almost being like soulless in the man. You know, it's like having no soul. That's what it seems like, right? Like they're almost trying to get, like, but in a way, keeping you away from. I don't know. I'm confused. Like with the black-eyed children.
You're right. You are right when you say they are kind of soulless because people describe them as sort of, you know, they look really pale. I mean, they're almost like as white as a sheet of paper sometimes, and sometimes their skin's darker, but they also have these starry, oversized eyes, and people just get this kind of really weird and unsettling vibe from them. You know, we all get that from occasionally when you meet someone you've never met before, but you instantly don't like them. You know what I mean? Everybody has that down again.
It's the vibe.
It's the vibe. But the Absolutely. Men in Black give off that vibe every time, and people are like,
wow.
There was just something about him which they couldn't put the finger on what it was, but it was just they just wanted to stay away from them. And so people, this has given rise to the idea that when you talk about them being soulless, you know, some people think they are sort of literally occult based or supernatural based, you know, that they're something almost like a demonic type entity. So again, there's like lots of different theories. You know, are they from the government? Are they aliens? Are they half human, half alien? Are they supernatural?
Are they around at night more than day? Or are they this?
Yeah.
But it's interesting. It's just you know what it is. There's too many people see stuff, and you got to kind of juggle through and say, okay, you know, like you're shifting through. Okay, the bullshit, the fake stuff, mm-hmm. the hoax. But there's a lot of guys out there that, like, you interview police officers, people who work in the fire department, airline pilots, this and that. So credible people, like you always say, credible people, they can't all be lying about this stuff, man. It can't be. But I think, in a way, I think, I'm about to call you Ken again, Nick Redfern, I'm sorry out there. I do that all the time.
That's all right.
But here's the
Ken's
here's
a good
deal.
Friend of mine, so he won't mind.
Yeah, that's why it's good. I kind of combined you. Because I was asking him, can you please put a good word in for me for Nick, man, so he can come on and talk to me, man? He's like, absolutely. Well, I guess one thing, once they get to hear me, I'm like the homeless guy just looking and searching and sniffing around who smells. You know, the information is amazing to me. But it's almost like, not to say the government, but there's people out there that want to hide something. Hide. And I don't know if it was set up that way by them or we just did it naturally ourselves, you know, community-wise. But when you mention this stuff to people, they look at me like I am like, they don't even want to click on my stuff, my podcast. They're like, this guy went nuts. He's talking about the Nephilim. He's talking about Enoch. He's talking about, you know, different stuff. And you know, I love it. I'm into it. You know, and I heard one guy on the radio say, on the internet today, say that the United States bombed Afghanistan, which is crazy, with this big, huge bomb today, which is, I don't like war. I'm not a war person. But then somebody mentioned that they were knocking out some Nephilim, some long-head, red-head, Nephilim giant people, the fallen angels, that they were in, that's what they were bombing. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, we get these, it's like, It's over. It's too much stuff now. I love the internet, but it's too much. You know what I mean? Like you see stories out there with different stuff, and you say, "What's going on? Well, this can't be true." But then I'm saying to myself, "Oh, there's UFOs," and people say, "Oh, you're a wacko. You like UFOs? You know, you're into that. You believe that? Like, you know, like what? How do you feel like when people say that? Do you get that feeling from other people?" What you believe
I mean, you have to have thick skin in this subject, you know, because a lot of people do sort of roll their eyes. But, you know, you have to sort of stand up for yourself, you know, and just say, look, this is why I think the phenomenon's real, whether you're talking about Bigfoot, whether you're talking about UFOs. The worst thing you can do is sort of get embarrassed and just hide in a corner, because that's not going to help your position. You've got to be sort of stand up and strong and say what you think and why you conclude these phenomena are real, you know. So so I don't really, you know, I don't lose sleep over people who think I'm crazy, you know, because I'm convinced in my mind that what I'm pursuing are real, valid mysteries. So if somebody wants, you know, wants to say that that's nonsense, well, you know, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. I mean, because there's far more important things in life than worrying about somebody at the other end of a radio show, you know, some phone-in guy who says, well, Nick's talking garbage, you know. I mean, I'm not going to... I'll put him right as to why I'm not talking garbage, but I'm not going to lose sleep over it, you know.
No way at all. Doing what you're doing, and keep on doing it.
Yeah.
People out there like me, I enjoy it. I don't give a shit what anybody else really...
They don't want to listen,
but I want to be a person where you could come to. Maybe if you have a question, you know, ask a guy like you, you know, call in and say, listen, I have a question for you, man. Nick, why do you think blah, blah, blah? Because, you know, some people are brought up a certain way. It's stubborn almost, man. Like, I'm anti-Christian now, you know, because I'm talking about this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not.
No, I mean, a good sort of parallel when people say, you know, don't people think you're crazy if you're investigating Bigfoot or something? And my answer is, well, you know, and it's not a disrespectful answer, it just happens to be true. You know, if I point out that millions of people every Sunday go to church and they pray to a God that's, you know, maybe it's all true, but they've never seen that God, but they have faith to allow them to pray to it, you know.
Absolutely.
So is that really any difference to... you know, investigating another supernatural phenomena, and
it's a little different. You know why it's a little different?
It is a little different, but I mean,
you don't get a chance to get a tax thing done by the government. So there is a difference, man. You got to pay taxes; they don't. You know what I mean? But nah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but
man,
I mean, when it comes to like belief systems, you have people who believe in Bigfoot, you have people who believe in God, you have people who believe, you know, that when we die, you have atheists who believe when we die, it's just lights out. You know, we have people who believe you go to heaven or hell. You have some religions that believe animals have souls. You have other religions say that animals don't have souls. Another religion says, you know, we recycle, we reincarnate. So in other words, there are multiple belief systems all around the world relating to strange phenomena. So, you know, believing in reincarnation as a cornerstone of one particular religion is really no wilder than believing that there's an 8-foot-tall ape in the Pacific Northwest woods, you know?
No, I agree. And it's like almost, I totally agree, man. And to really research and look into it and do what you do, it's unbelievable, man. What the amount of research you have to go through to put together one of these books, man. I give you a lot of credit. Do you look at it like you're investigating to what you want to feel? You know what I mean? Like what you want to believe in? So you do investigating like that? Or
no. I think, you know, if you start writing a book and you want it to try and reinforce a belief system, you're sort of biasing yourself. You know, it's like, I think any book that I write, I just go where the evidence of the data goes. I don't try and force it to fit in a belief system that I have. You know, like if we just gave the Men in Black as a good example, you know, if I wanted to believe that the Men in Black were time travelers, but I found information that pushed it in another direction, I wouldn't ignore that data or hide it. I would go with where it leads. And I think, you know, that's a danger that sometimes happens where people cross the line. And instead of sort of sharing in a book the information they found, they try and force a belief system of their own creation onto the reader. And that, you know, that's not a responsible way of doing it, I don't think.
Nah, and I think you're right, because the way you do it is perfect, man. It's absolutely perfect. You give so many different angles and different sides to it, and it gives a person an opportunity to, you know, take their own, you know, belief on what the proof is. And that I like, man. I definitely do. I had a question for you, but I lost my train of thought for a second. Oh, man, it's terrible. I always do that. Oh, man, you know what it is? I'm telling you that you're coming off the flu. And I said to myself, let me hurry up, get these questions in, man. But what does Nick like to do besides, you know, writing books and, you know, research and stuff like that? What kind of novel would you pick up, or book would you pick up that's not, you know, take you away from the UFO and other stuff like that? What else are you into?
Well, Well, actually, that's an important question or point because, you know, I always point out to people that when you're dealing with things like this, it's important to have sort of a regular, normal life as well. And I like to sort of, for me, I like to sort of work like 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and then I switch off, you know, I switch off evenings and all weekends, you know, my laptop sort of goes into sleep mode 5 o'clock every afternoon, and on weekends, you know, Friday afternoon it usually goes off about 4 o'clock. It doesn't come back on again till like 9 o'clock Monday morning. And so, for me, I mean, my interest, big interest for music, I sort of grew up in the whole with punk music, and that's still what I like now, really. You know, I mean, there's other music I like, but mainly that's, I still like that. And I'm big into soccer, so me and a bunch of friends usually go, and there's one of the local English theme pubs not far from where I live, and they've got like a big huge TV screen where they play the English soccer, so I go to see, you know, one of those sort of once or twice a week, you know. Friday night might be sort of, you know, taking a girlfriend out to see a band. Saturday night to soccer night. You know, people sometimes are quite surprised when they find out how down to earth and quote normal, you know, my a sort of life is outside of writing. You know, it is sort of regular stuff, you know, going to concerts, just going out for a few drinks, going for dinner, you know, going to a sports game, you know, just everyday stuff, really.
You're hanging out, you're popping out in the Ramones, and you listen to one, my favorite Ramones song. I have an Uncle Dennis who, like I was telling you before the show, big Ramones fan, and he hung out with one of the drummers, Marky. When I was a kid, right, I live in a town called Rockaway Beach. So you know that Ramones, right? Come on, man. And I can tell you, you know, the Ramones song. Okay, you know exactly where I live. I'm just, you know, the blast of the disco on the radio or something like that, right? But I'm right there and stuff like that. When I was a kid, he used to take me down to a garage. And I didn't know who these people were, man. And they were jamming out in a garage in Woodside in Queens. And it was the Ramones. I didn't know.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Yeah, I didn't know who they were. I was like 8, 7, 8 years old. My uncle would take me. He'd give me a sip of his Budweiser, you know, and stuff like that. It was crazy. But, yeah, listening to that, my favorite song out of all of them, and I hate to go, it's off the topic, but Needles and Pins, when they redid that song, that is my all-time. It's not even like a punk song, but it is one of my favorite songs. That's one of my favorite songs that he did, man. And then I watched the documentary on the Ramones. Did you ever see that the PBS one?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was incredible, man. And I didn't even know that, like, all that fighting was going on between the two of them.
Oh, yeah, they didn't all get on that well.
No, I guess that makes great music, right, man? I don't know what it is.
Well, yeah, you know, there's got a bit of tension. And, I mean, a lot of bands like that. I mean, a lot of my writing that I still do now and, you know, is writing for music magazines, and you know, I've got sort of to see a lot of bands behind the scenes, and you get that a lot. You know, egos come into it, and you know, they all want to share the writing credits when just one member of the band wrote the songs because they're going to get less money if they're not credited. So you know, you and just traveling around, you know, in a van together for years, they just, you can see why they just get on each other's nerves after a while, and there's so much fighting, you know, it's just one of those inevitable things that happens.
It's like a family, man. Even in a family, the brothers
are
going to fight,
right?
Like a
family,
beat each other down. But I got to see them one time out in the Long Island club, right before one of the tail ends of the tour, man. They're like one of the last tours, and I got to see them. That was pretty cool, man. It led me to all the music. I mean, don't get me wrong, but one of the things about the Ramones, and we're talking about the Ramones now. One thing about the Ramones is that a great band from England. Came from, you know, the Ramones. Not the Ramones, they love the Ramones, the Clash, man. The story about them sneaking in. And that was crazy because the Ramones couldn't sell out anything over here in the city, man. They would play CBGBs on a Sunday, yeah, pack it out, right? Oh, no doubt. But when they went overseas, they would sell out stadiums. You know what I mean? It was like crazy.
Yeah.
But back here, they didn't take it in, man. I don't know why. I guess the punk rock is kind of like the UFO community, like this, like almost underground in a way. It's like, you're in the underground. I'm in the underground.
Yeah, it is, but I mean, I don't mind that. I kind of enjoy that underground aspect. You know, it's kind of like when you're growing up with a kid, as a kid, and you know, you find some new band, and you and all your friends know about it. I mean, it's kind of like when nobody else knows about them, it's more cool than when they become big. You know.
Yep. Absolutely.
I used to go and see the Ramones when they used to come to England. They used to play at a club in the city of Birmingham near to where I live called the Hummingbird. And they were like really crazy fun gigs because there'd be like, you know, I think the maximum number of people you could get in there was like 2,000. But you can guarantee there was like 4,000 in there, you know, when the band played. And it was just like jammed. But that was cool, you know, that's how it was meant to be. You know?
No, we're getting to know Nick Redfern, author, and we're getting to know a little about himself. And that's important, too. I just don't want to know. I mean, I want to know all about the stories, but I read them, and I actually listened to them. People get mad at me when I tell people, yeah, I read the book. They're like, you didn't read it. You listened to it, man. What are you talking about? You read it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you didn't read nothing, but I'm getting to know a little about you, man. Besides the Ramones, I saw the what you call it, on you, the Motorhead shirt in one of the pictures on Facebook, and I was going to say, I play the Ace of Spades. Oh, I can imagine, man. I can imagine Clash and all that. Now, you said you write for music magazine too?
Yeah, well, going back to that magazine called Zero that I used to write for when I first finished school, that sort of got me into music writing. But over the years, I've done a lot of freelance writing for like newsstand music magazines, you know, doing gig reviews or articles and anniversary features, that kind of thing. And, you know, so it's all good fun. You know, you get to meet different rock stars or whatever. One of the coolest guys I ever hung out with was Tom Araya, the singer out of Slayer. You know, I mean, they're like a really intense band. You know, they're really intense. But hanging out with him, he was just like a regular laid-back guy, you know, just chatting and whatever. He was cool.
Them guys, Slayer overseas, man. You go down to South America, oh my gosh. You want to see Pandemonium, them, Iron Maiden, stuff like that, man. I enjoy a lot of that stuff, man. Seasons of the Abyss, I used to love that stuff, man. Like, you can go to the gym and you want to work out, man. You put some Slayer on, Killing Fields, and 213, and I'm just like tearing up. But listen, I appreciate you taking the time, you know, on this Thursday night. You're feeling under the weather. It's about an hour in. Down the line, when I want to talk about one of your other books I read or listened to, I should say, I'll get you back on, Nick. And I keep you up at the hour. But I had a lot of fun, man. Now, all-time favorite movie, what would it be? Real quick, movie. You got to pick a movie to sit down and watch.
It's tough to pick one, but one of my all-time favorites, I don't know if you've ever seen it, it's a Johnny Depp movie called The Ninth Gate. It's like a supernatural story about this book supposedly written by the devil. And it's like a cool kind of almost gothic kind of detective story. It's The Ninth Gate. That's a good one.
I thought you were going to say like The Bronx Tale or something like that, man. I'm a monster movie guy, but no, I kind of figured that. Ninth Gate. I'm going to check that out, man. I'll watch it in the daytime.
Yeah, there you go.
Listen, I appreciate it, man, taking the time out, man, and discussing all the stuff with me, man. I appreciate that, man. Buckertown Podcast.
Well, thanks a lot, Buck. I had a good time. Thanks.
All right, man. Just spread the word if anybody asks, man. Next week, I got a guy, Gary Wayne. Gary Wayne coming on. He's going to talk about some Genesis conspiracy stuff, man. That's going to be deep. I think I'm over my head with that one, but I'll give it a shot. But anyway, I appreciate it, man, and I can't wait to see you on Ancient Aliens, man. I know that.
All right.
I love
thanks a lot, Bob.
And now I can say... Now I can say, I know that guy. I had him on my show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Have a good night, brother.
Thanks. You too. See you later. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Buck Gritano Podcast. What you've been listening to is anybody's guess. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion, drop us a line and tune in next time to the Buck Gritano Podcast.